From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Matt Baskin, in for Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where the school year is about to gear up and districts are scrambling to make sure it's safe to bring students and staff back for in-person learning. While so much about COVID is in the hands of scientists, doctors, experts, everything from developing mRNA vaccines to manufacturing N95 masks, there is something schools and teachers are able to do themselves, make DIY or do-it-yourself air purifiers. GBH Radio's Gabriella Emanuel has been looking into this very effective and very cheap option. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Before we get to the DIY air purifier, tell me what it's like for teachers and students to be heading back to school. Just incredible to think, but just maybe a week or so away.
Yeah, and I think there is actually a lot of anxiety and concern among at least the teachers I've spoken to. One of them was Eric Shulga, who teaches 8th grade English in Newburyport, and he told me that he's terrified. He was scared last year, but he said this year, with the Delta variant kind of raging and he has young, unvaccinated kids at home, his anxiety has never been higher. So Shulga has actually channeled his fear into studying up on everything he can related to clean air and ventilation for his classroom. And he did things like go back and forth on Twitter with renowned experts. And when he was waiting to pick up his daughter at daycare, he said he'd kind of pull up studies online.
It's like tiny little words on the screen of my phone, trying to like just squeeze in a few minutes that I had here and there to try to find out as much information as I could.
What he was looking for was something simple and effective, something that he could do himself.
And that, of course, is the DIY air purifier.
Exactly, yep.
So what exactly is this thing and how does it work?
Okay, so this DIY air purifier is basically a box made out of high-quality air filters, some cardboard, a fan, and duct tape. It's kind of all taped together and it forms a cube that's the size of a mini fridge. Here is someone named Don Blair explaining it.
Looks like a sort of janky box that has four sides made out of these standard air filters. And the top of the box is a 20-inch box fan. Probably takes about 10 or 20 minutes, really, to just assemble these things and tape them up. And if you do goof up, then no problem. It'll take you 30 minutes.
Blair is a citizen scientist in the Boston area, and in his spare time, he's pulled together all sorts of resources to help teachers like Shulga build these homemade purifiers for their classrooms. He's made illustrated instructions and offered kind of pro tips on where to place them in your classroom and how long they last. The materials cost $120 or less, and this thing is supposed to last for an entire school year. Basically, what happens is the fan pulls air in through the filters, which cleans it of small particles, virus-laden particles, if there are those in the classroom, and then it pushes the clean air out the top.
How do we know that this thing actually works?
Well, that is a good question. The design is actually from a renowned air quality expert, Richard Corsi. He is dean of the College of Engineering and Computer Science at Portland State University, although he's about to head to UC Davis, I believe. And this was his idea. He actually just threw it out on Twitter, and within 24 hours, another expert, Jim Rosenthal, had built it. So together, they called it the Corsi-Rosenthal box. And it just took off. I spoke to Corsi, and he said a lot of people have been testing it and getting really, really good results.
People are now reporting 600 cubic feet per minute as clean air delivery rates. That's phenomenal. That's actually better than a lot of the more expensive HEPA-based portable air cleaners.
Now, this means something because Corsi is a big advocate for HEPA filters, which you can basically plug in at your desk or in your classroom. And when it comes to school districts getting ready for the fall really soon, Corsi is actually worried about school districts who can't afford HEPA filters because they are many, many hundreds of dollars, if not more. And he's also concerned about the school districts that are being sold a bill of goods.
We have almost no information about a lot of technologies that are being heavily marketed to school districts right now. They haven't been rigorously tested and reviewed in peer-reviewed literature.
Corsi says he loves the idea of teachers using these things, and he's even imagined shop classes kind of building them for the whole school or even their community. Of course, the benefits are good, not just in the classroom, but also in offices and shops.
So this is a cool idea, and the idea of it being sort of a class project is interesting, but I can kind of imagine maybe teachers being annoyed that this is something, yet another thing that's being put on them. We hear all the time about all the extra labor that teachers do outside of just educating. Have you heard from any who are maybe chafing at this idea?
I actually have, and that's a very good point. I think some people have said kind of like, why should we have to do this? Shouldn't we, like, fundamental to our work, shouldn't be that be a safe work environment, not just for the teacher, but also for the kids. However, every air quality expert I spoke to, and it was about half a dozen in this reporting, all said there is reason to be concerned, both for teachers and for parents who are sending their kids into school. There was actually a report that came out middle of last year from the U.S. Government Accountability Office, and they found that an estimated 41% of school districts need to update or replace their heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems because over half of the schools in those districts kind of don't have good functioning HVAC systems. So that suggests that teachers shouldn't have to do this, but often the reality is that they may have to.
Well, Gabriella, this is interesting stuff. Thank you for your reporting. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
That's GBH reporter Gabriella Emanuel. Before we go, I should let you know what else is up. A state workers union is applauding Governor Charlie Baker's decision to reverse course and require that all employees under his authority get vaccinated against COVID. Peter McKinnon is president of SEIU Local 509, a union representing roughly 8,500 state workers. He says Baker's move is the right one, but the state needs to do its part.
Making sure that everyone has access to the vaccine is going to be key. Making sure that nobody is punished because they're not able to immediately get it, that they have the ability to access it. Those things seem to be built in, and that's what Local 509 wants to see.
Some other unions are criticizing Baker's mandate. The National Association of Government Employees says the governor should have followed the course of other states that are letting unvaccinated staffers come to work so long as they undergo regular testing for COVID. And the Massachusetts Correction Officers Federated Union claims that Baker's order is unconstitutional. It's threatening to sue the state. Meantime, in the wake of the new mandate, State Senate President Karen Spilka is pushing to extend Massachusetts' emergency paid sick leave law that requires employers to give workers up to a week of paid time off for COVID-related reasons. In other news, the city of Boston is trying to help residents who don't speak English get easier access to services and information. A new ordinance requires that materials put out by the city be translated into more languages, and for those translations to be made available more quickly. Councillor Julia Mejia sponsored the ordinance. She says it's about fairness.
We're declaring that the voices of the people who speak languages other than English matter just as much as anybody else's. You're not an obstacle or a burden to the work of this city.
Looking ahead to the weekend now, Tropical Storm Henry is expected to hit the New England coast sometime Sunday morning. Meteorologist David Epstein says it's possible that Henry could be more than a tropical storm when it makes landfall.
Now, will it be a hurricane when it hits here? The models are forecasting the storm has to, first of all, go over the Gulf Stream. The waters are very warm out there, and that will probably put it at hurricane strength before it reaches the New England coastline. The question is once it crosses the Gulf Stream, then it starts to get into cooler waters. It's really going to depend on how quickly this thing's moving. If it starts moving really quickly, it's probably going to hit the New England coastline as a hurricane.
If the current storm track holds, the heaviest winds would likely hit the Cape and Islands. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo in news, I'm Matt Baskin. Paris Alston is back on Monday. Have a great weekend and stay safe. Between Zoom meetings and Zoom classrooms, have you and the kids had enough of screen time? Turn off the screen and tune into the brand new Pinkalicious and Peterific podcast. Join Pinkalicious and her little brother Peter as they sing along to their favorite songs from the hit PBS kids show, Pinkalicious and Peterific. Don't blame me if you catch a bit of an earworm. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite player.